Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to Innergex Renewable Energy's 2021 first quarter results conference call and webcast. At this time, all participants on the phone and internet are in listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session for analysts and institutional investors, and instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue for questions. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star followed by the zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded. I will now turn the conference over to Karine Vachon, Senior Director of Communications. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for joining us. I'd like to specify that this conference will be held in English. Members of the media are invited to ask their questions by phone after this call. A presentation supporting today's discussion is available as we speak on the homepage of our website at www.innergex.com. This call contains forward-looking statements within the meaning of applicable securities laws. Although the corporation believes that the expectations and assumptions on which forward-looking statements are based are reasonable under the current circumstances, listeners are cautioned not to rely unduly on these forward-looking statements, as no assurance can be given that it will prove to be correct. Forward-looking information contained herein is made as of the date of this call, and the corporation does not undertake any obligation to update or revise any forward-looking information, whether as a result of events or circumstances occurring after the date hereof, unless so required by law. During this call, we will refer to financial measures that are not recognized according to International Financial Reporting Standards. Please refer to the non-IFRS measures sections of the MD&A for more information. Our speakers today will be Mr. Jean-François Neault, Chief Financial Officer, who will present the Q1 results, and Mr. Michel Letellier, President and Chief Executive Officer, who will review our operational highlights. I'll turn the conference over to Mr. Neault.
Thank you, Karine. Good morning, everyone. Before we start, I would like to inform you that we have prepared a supplement of information to the first quarter report that explains in detail how the February 2021 Texas events have impacted our results. I recommend that you read that section to have a complete overview of the situation, since today I will present a summary. However, the supplement provides a broader set of normalized table and information on the recent proceedings. As you can see on page seven, we have four operating facilities in Texas, three of which with power hedges. However, all of them, to a different extent, have recorded extraordinary nodal revenues derived from higher price caused by the unprecedented weather conditions, with $17 million for Foard City, $38 million for Phoebe, $15 million for Flat Top, and $65 million for Shannon. As we said many times before, the power hedges contain virtual hourly energy obligations, which had a negative impact of $71 million for Phoebe, $114 million for Flat Top, and $93 million for Shannon. As a result, and as previously estimated in our press release in February, the net financial impact on a consolidated basis reached precisely $81.2 million. On the next page, we normalized our first quarter results to exclude the Texas impact on our revenues, adjusted EBITDA, and our loss before income tax. As you can see, Foard City and Phoebe extraordinary revenues are deducted from the revenues and adjusted EBITDA to arrive to a normalized figures of $135 million and $88 million, respectively. As for the negative impact of the power and basis hedge of Phoebe, it has been deducted from the change in fair value of financial instruments, whereas the net negative impact of the Texas storm on the two joint ventures, Shannon and Flat Top, have been excluded from the share of loss of joint ventures. Here, the normalized loss from joint ventures remained high at $144 million due to Innergex's share of the impairment charges at the project level for Shannon and Flat Top. In fact, as shown on page 9, following the storm, we have seen higher risk premium on Texas investments, which has caused the discount rate to increase substantially from December 2020. Therefore, the recalculation of value in use of these assets at the project level became lower than their respective carrying value on the balance sheet. Consequently, Innergex recognized in the first quarter its share of these impairment charges as part of the share of loss of joint ventures. This share of impairment charges was capped to the maximum amount equal to our investment value of those assets on our consolidated balance sheet. Consequently, the investment value at the end of March 31st, 2021 for both assets is zero. Also, in regard to the cash settlements, it is worth mentioning that as of March 31, 2021, the Fort City $17 million gain recognized during the storm and recorded as accounts receivable as at the end of February was subsequently paid in March. However, the liabilities for Phoebe were not settled and are still part of the consolidated balance sheet as accounts payable. As for Shannon and Flat Top, the liabilities were not settled and remain at the project level balance sheet, which, given it is accounted for as equity pickup method, consequently are not included in Innergex consolidated accounts payable. Now, let me comment on recent procedures with regards to Shannon and Flat Top. As implied in the press release dated February 17, Shannon and Flat Top have filed for force majeure. In order to protect our right until the hearing on force majeure take place, we have filed a temporary injunction to prevent Flat Top and Shannon's edge provider to exercise its remedies on the projects. The hearing has happened on May 6th, and the decision should be rendered at the latest by May 20th. Now, looking ahead, the worst-case scenario following these procedures would be the foreclosure of the projects. Should this worst-case scenario happen, the recurring negative impact to the free cash flow would be at approximately $4.2 million per year until the flip point. This scenario would also mean an avoided cash outflow of $76 million. In other words, under this worst-case scenario, the avoided cash outflow when compared to the minor recurring loss on free cash flow make this potential foreclosure outcome a more profitable scenario for our shareholders, given the other investment opportunities the corporation is evaluating on a recurring basis. Now, to be able to compare the result of this quarter with the same period last year, we have normalized the results to remove the impact from the Texas event. Therefore, the result that I will cover today will be on a normalized basis. On page 11, for the quarter ended March 31, 2021, on a normalized basis, production and revenues were up 6 and 2% respectively, compared to the same period last year. Adjusted EBITDA was down by 3%. This decrease was mainly attributable to a lower contribution from wind facilities in France and hydroelectric facilities in BC, both due to lower revenues and by higher prospective expense over lower general admin expenses. Adjusted EBITDA proportionate was down by 2%. On page 12, for the three-month period ended March, hydroelectric power generation segment generated $14.5 million in adjusted EBITDA, representing a 12% decrease compared to the same period last year, mainly due to lower revenue derived from almost exclusively from the lower production at the facilities in British Columbia. This decrease was partly offset by higher revenue from higher production over higher operational expense at the Quebec facilities. Wind power generation segment generated $82.8 million in normalized adjusted EBITDA, representing a 2% increase compared to the same period last year. This increase was mainly attributable to the Montaner acquisition in 2020 and to a higher contribution from the Ford City facility due to a combined effect of higher revenues and lower OPEX. These items were partly offset by a lower contribution from the wind facility in France due to lower wind regime. Solar power generation segment generated $5.9 million in normalized adjusted EBITDA, representing a 4% increase compared to the same period last year. This increase was mainly explained by the contribution of the Salvador acquisition in 2020, partly offset by lower contribution from the Phoebe solar facility attributable to a net unfavorable impact of lower revenues due to lower selling price. On page 30, for the quarter ended March 31st, the joint ventures and associates contributed $8 million to the normalized adjusted EBITDA proportionate compared with a contribution of $7.5 million in the same quarter last year. This increase was mainly due to a higher contribution from the Chile facilities from a combined favorable impact of lower operating expense over lower revenue, despite higher production. This increase is also explained by a higher contribution from facilities in BC from lower operational expenses. A higher contribution from the Shannon and Flattop facility, mostly due to higher average selling prices, and a higher contribution of the Vigée-Denonville wind facility in Quebec also contributed to this increase. In addition, the proportional production tax credit decreased from $18.1 million to $17.4 million was due to lower production tax credit earned from the lower production at Shannon and Flattop facilities. Overall, normalized adjusted EBITDA proportionate decreased by 2% compared to the same period last year. Continuing on page 14, the increase in long-term debt is related largely to the draws made toward the construction of the Griffin Trail project. In addition, the corporate revolving credit facility was used for reimbursing the outstanding balance of the Altera term loan on January 11, 2021. On page 15, changes in the total assets stem mainly from the reduction in value of our investment in joint ventures and associates, as mentioned before. The change in shareholder equity is explained to the dividend declared on common and preferred share totaling $32.9 million and the total comprehensive loss of $172.5 million. As shown on the next page, the normalized free cash flow has decreased by $2 million on a trailing 12-month basis. The unfavorable variance in free cash flow was mainly due to an increase in principal payments stemming from the Phoebe and Ford City Commission in late 2019 and from the Montaner acquisition from mid-2020, the BC Hydro imposed curtailment in mid-2020, and the recovery of maintenance capex expenditures from the sale of HS of COP. These items were partly offset by the contribution from the Phoebe and Fort City facility and from the Salvador and Montaner acquisition, and also a decrease in interest payment on the corporate revolving credit facility concurrent with the Hydro-Québec private placement. For the trailing 12 months ended March 31st, the normalized payout ratio amounted to 140% of free cash flow, compared with 113% for the corresponding period last year. Now, before I conclude, the guidance provided in February 2021 remained relevant when compared with the normalized 2021 financial performance. At the moment, despite a lower Q1 generation, we are not revising the guidance since it is still possible to reach these projections on a normalized basis before the end of Q4. In the event that the worst-case scenario materializes, we will then revise our guidance at the time. On that note, I will give the floor to Michel for the operational review of the past quarter.
Thank you, Jean-François. This is the type of quarter that we would rather forget, but it is making us even more committed and resolved to execute on our growth strategy and to continue to diversify our portfolio. We will not forget, and we will make our best effort so that this type of crisis will not be recurring. We have moved away from these power hedges structure and have shown that we could develop projects differently with both Fort City and Griffin Trail. Both projects could benefit from future high prices in Texas. So we have lived through this Texas crisis. We have learned the hard way, but now it is time to move on. So now let's focus on the bright side of the great opportunity that lies in front of us. We had some great news in this quarter beside the crisis and the operation. So let's try to focus on this. Well, I'm glad to report that Hillcrest, just as last night, reached the COD commercial operation date under these long-term PPA. So we're very proud and happy to report on this. A lot of people have worked pretty hard on this project over the last months, and it was a challenging period with the COVID and the restriction on traveling for us to go on our site. So our dedicated team did a great job, and now we can sell this electricity. 200 megawatt of solar is being added up to our portfolio. So congrats on our team. Very happy on this. The final final construction finalization will be probably be towards the end of June, and from there we'll be able to do the tax equity financial close by something in the mid-July, and that would conclude the final construction and tax equity contribution. We will be then reimbursing the bridge construction to tax equity. On another good note, Eon 2, our 6.9 megawatt in France, has reached, again, the full commissioning. So that's another good news on the on that quarter. And Griffin Trail, as we mentioned, is now very advanced. Actually, reading the report from our construction crews, we should be topping all the 80 megawatt would be totally installed by the end of this week, and they should be starting producing power by the mid-June, so that full COD could be reached by beginning of July.
You mean 80 towers?
Yeah, 80 towers. Thank you. What did I say? Well, anyway.
80 megawatts.
No.
225 megawatts.
No, that's true. That 220, yeah, I'm sorry, the towers. And so that plant should be in full operational to take advantage of the high prices in Texas in summertime. We have also resumed the work in Inavik, this hydro facility in the north of Quebec. So glad to see that we this year again we can reach these construction sites with special health and safety precaution. We have full access to the site, and construction is resuming as a regular, I would say, full strength in the summer for Innavik. We still forecast the COD by the end of next year. Now, on the development activities, we're seeing some good movement in the power prices in Chile, so we're still advancing our development activities there. You probably have seen the copper prices going through the roof, which is a good thing for Peru and Chile. As you know, those two countries are big producers of copper, and although they've been, their economy has been hit hard by the COVID, the future looks bright for these two countries, and we're still committed to develop a project in this area. As we go through the quarters, we're getting ready for starting construction in Hawaii. We have been advancing on both permitting, construction, negotiation, and final engineering on four of these projects. So the first construction should start by the middle of next fall. Very happy also going through these engineering and construction negotiation. I think we are learning a lot. As you know, storage is a big part of our future strategy, and I think that storage coupled with battery, coupled with solar, will play a big role in many many areas in the world to supply future electricity, and Innergex is in the forefront of that new area. We also are advancing and glad to report that we have finally signed the agreement with the supply of the battery for our Tonnerre project in France. We have signed, we are the first commercial customer of Hydro-Québec division Evlo. So pretty happy to be the first, and hopefully some other project will follow with them. We have come together and learned a lot in our team, so that this is basically some investment in time and resources, so that both teams can work better in the future to develop even more projects. And as well, as you know, storage is a big part of our strategy. We have been talking about hydrogen, green hydrogen. And we have hired now a seasoned veteran in that business, so that we are now building our team and expertise to take advantage of future government support for green hydrogen. Now, if we're looking at our prospective project, we are still focused on our strategy, which is developing solar and wind in the United States. Very, I would say, very encouraged by the policy that are being discussed to support future projects in the United States. ITC, PTC, and kind of a PTC also for hydrogen, and some more local support in the state of California and Washington are being discussed to support green hydrogen in the future. So I think that the United States is showing a great leadership in order to have more and more renewable energy in their portfolio mix. We are seeing also in Europe that those countries, France, Germany, and others, are also supporting future renewable energy project to be part of the future mix of electrification of these economy. So very happy to have built out a stronger and stronger presence in France. Also have hired and been able now to initiate some development in solar as well in France. So we have now a team that is focusing as well on solar in France, and we should see some benefit from these effort in the near future. Canada is or Quebec is now being studied, and we had great news in the last couple of months. Now we have seen that the government of Quebec, together with Hydro-Québec, is going to put forward a call for an RFP for renewable energy anywhere between 200 and 500 megawatt in the end of the year or beginning of next year. So that's very positive for us. As you know, we have been working in Canada and Quebec specifically. So our team are now focusing on trying to dust up some old project that we were working on in the past. And apparently, this is the first of a few more RFP for the future. So things looks even better and better also in our core market or home market. So basically, this is what we've been doing in the last quarter. And since we had a lot of time passed on Texas, I would open up the question. But before that, I would thanks our team, that Jean-François's team, that have worked hard lately. As you can imagine, these numbers have been moving around, and we have these court representation that has completed the stuff. I would like also to extend my thanks to all you, the analysts that are going through these complicated numbers. Very happy to have you support us, and I'm opening up now the floor. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star followed by the one on your touch tone phone. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received. Please ensure you lift the handset if you're using a speakerphone before pressing any keys. And your first question comes from the line of David Quezada with Raymond James. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks. Morning, everyone. My first question here, just on the offtake agreements for Shannon and Flattop. I'm just wondering if, like, where you're at with, I guess, potentially altering or unwinding those hedge contracts, and if you've had any conversations with the tax equity providers around potentially doing that.
Well, David, it's a little bit difficult to discuss these things right now. We're in the middle of trying to solve that in court. But I would say, David, that if we're to reinvest in those, which is, I don't know, I wouldn't say very likely, then we would try to get rid of these things. But as you've seen and heard, Jean-François, I think that the worst-case scenario we have put it in front of you is that we would have written off those investments completely. So anything that would could come out of these negotiations would be a little bit better than actually us writing it off completely.
Absolutely. Fair enough. Thank you. And then just one other question, I guess, just related to the U.S. market in general. I'm just curious about, you know, when you see some pretty encouraging trends like increased commercial and industrial demand for renewable power, the more supportive regulatory backdrop. I'm wondering if you just talk about how things have developed, or any color you can share on your earlier stage development portfolio and maybe whatever activities in terms of securing land that you're undertaking for the next, I guess, phase of projects.
No, that's fair enough. We've talked a little bit, and one of our project, 200 megawatt solar development in Ohio, have been making a little bit of a press lately. It's Palomino. That's a 200 megawatt solar that we are advancing. We're in the middle of permitting and I would say public hearing. This thing is advancing very well. Also, we have also some term sheet with off-taker that have been advanced quite a bit. So this is probably the most advanced, but we're working towards our target, which is around 600 megawatt of solar in outside Texas. We have PGM, we have Pennsylvania, Kentucky, and like I said, Ohio through I'm forgetting the name of Palomino. I'm sorry. And then we also are advancing in the Northwest, working as well with wind. You're seeing that we have a little bit over 400 megawatt worth of wind in our advanced projects. So those are also advancing. I would say that the team is building up as well in different markets. We have now a new small office in the East Coast to cover the East as well. So I think that we're making good stride. Hawaii will get also a third RFP, and we're getting ready also to answer these future RFPs. Batteries opportunity are being looked with Hydro-Québec in joint venture with Hydro-Québec. We're trying to find good spot to deploy batteries in the United States. We're focusing a lot of our activities now in the States because, like you're saying, there's definitely a lot of support, political support, both on federal and state level.
That's great, Geller. Thanks, Michelle. I'll get back in the queue.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Rupert Mayer with National Bank. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Going back to Texas, have you seen any precedents in Texas where projects have been recapitalized or recontracted? And what would a scenario look like where you would consider recapitalizing your assets? Would you need just to see a change to the hedge contracts or reduced liability as well?
Well, we've been trying to negotiate some discount on the on the total liability or the invoice. So far, the hedge provider have resisted any negotiation in discounting these invoices. Or, of course, if court gives us a little bit more room and we're in front of the judge, so we're waiting for the result. Hearing has had happened on the May 6th, and the judge said that he would render his decision by May 21. So if we have a positive note there, we may, Rupert, have a little bit more leverage to negotiate something else. Mind you that we have both in Shannon and Flat Top, we have also partners that we would have to agree or not. I mean, we would have, if they are not willing to put more capital, we would have to come up with some kind of a resolution on how we would recapitalize these things. Tax equity would have to waive also some of their economics for us to decide to go ahead. All in all, you heard also that Jean-François has mentioned that our perceived discount rate for Texas has gone up, and therefore we would have to see some future accretive return for us to put more money in those contracts, and certainly have a different power hedge configuration instead of having the power hedge. So it's a lot of stuff to negotiate before we could put some money. So that's why we wanted to give you the perspective to all the financial community that worst case, walking away from Flat Top and Shannon, and we've written it off from our books. Anything else could be positive, I would guess. You know, definitely we would be very careful before putting more capital. But we never know, right? I mean, if court is giving us some headroom there to negotiate with all the stakeholder, it might make sense. But definitely we want to focus on something else. We have a great outcome. We have great opportunities in our core market, and it's very unfortunate what we have lived through Texas, as I mentioned. But me, I've turned the page, and we're forward looking into these great other opportunities. But we will not forget, like I said, you know, we have learned, and we're not going to put ourselves in that same situation.
Have there been any court precedents yet in Texas that might indicate where things are headed with your projects?
Well, there's still some, there have been some rulings just yet, but not the full extent that we would like. We're following others, of course. Some have gone to New York, and in New York, that definitely was not very successful. So, but the fact that two judges had taken in consideration our representation, it's a little bit positive. But again, I don't want to give any hope to the market on Texas. If we win something, good. But like I said, time's to move on from Texas.
And by the way, our hearing is in Texas.
Yes. And I think that if we're successful there, we might have some potential capacity to make a little bit better. But you know, I don't want to focus on this. Myself, I've moved on.
Very good. I'll get back in the queue. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Sean Stewart with TD Securities.
Thank you. Good morning. A couple of questions just to finish off Texas. The worst case scenario you highlighted with the $4.2 million of free cash flow until the flip point, that was based on, I think, 2020 results. Do you consider that representative of what those assets are capable of in a normal environment? We were under the impression it might be a little bit higher than that.
Yes, that's a good point. I've looked backward. We never did really higher than $5 million at any year since their inception in COD. We were hoping, but those projects also were carried some shape and the basis was higher than the original forecast. So that's a good point. So we use 4.2 until the flip point. So obviously those projects were back-ended in terms of cash or greater cash. But you can refer to our value in use that we've disclosed for the impairment charges with higher discount rate to have a proxy figures on the valuation we're making on those projections. So that may covers a different view of the valuation if you don't like the 4.2. But so far, I mean, historically, that is the best proxy we can provide that we've achieved on those projects.
Yeah, Sean, I think that Texas has had in the last few years, some challenging in the basis, the risk between the node and the hub that did minimize the potential revenue of these things. I would think that over time, the transmission system, that these bases would have been reduced over time. And after flip point, as we all said, tax equity was a structure where theoretically after flip point, the project doesn't have that much debt and perhaps would generate a lot more cash flow. But in the latest few years, as Jean-François said, Shannon particularly has not been a big producer, and Flattop, which is been commissioned, had a little bit of issue with some commissioning deficiency from Vesta. Some blade repairment were underway also, and some upgrades on those blades were supposed to be done and actually are being done by Vesta as we speak. So, I mean, we're sad to potentially let these assets go, you know, the type of commitment or financial commitment that we have to look, considering the relatively poor performance of the last few years of these assets, are not putting, I would say that it is not necessarily a very appealing financial proposal as we speak. And of course, we would have to do something with the existing power hedge which might also include some more capital to be put into those projects. So,
and also, Sean, you should remember those projects are fixed return type of tax equity investment with movable flip dates. And as we disclose in Q4, those flip dates for Shannon and Flattop on the back of the recent year's performance were under reassessment. So the flip date always move until a certain fixed return. So just to make it clear.
Lots of moving pieces. Thanks for that. Second question is there any update on the timeline for the arbitration process with BC Hydro on last year's curtailments?
Yeah, we're scheduled to be early September, Sean.
Okay. Okay, that's all I have for now. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Nelson Nidge with RBC Capital Markets.
Great, thanks. So just to follow up on all the Texas questions, I didn't really understand the impact on Shannon. So you've written it down to zero, but like the net impact for Shannon was about $14 million, right? Like if you take your share and if you net out the revenues and the power hedges. So should we be thinking that the net impact on Shannon is $14 million, but if you discount the cash flows, the net amount is zero? Like how, like am I thinking
okay,
about
so,
it the right way?
So, okay. So just for clarification, so those, I'm hearing some noise. I don't know if you can mute, anybody can mute for now, but. Changes from quarter to quarter depending on their net earnings or net. So the what has happened is the Texas storm net asset has decreased the investment value at the balance. The end of March.
So you're cutting off there. I can't hear you very well.
No, I don't know if it's on our side, but we hear very bad noise.
It seems that there's
It sounds like it's coming from Mr. Nelson's line.
Oh, you know what? Let me mute while I listen to your response.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah, much better. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, so put the loss of Shannon, okay, that loss of the Texas storm, the loss has decreased the beginning value on the balance sheet of their investment value because it's we take the beginning value on the investment, then we decrease it by any net earning gain or net earning losses. And then after the impairment calculation is a totally different view of calculating. So Shannon was not having so much of a room as at December 20th when we did the impairment calculation. But now with this increase in risk premium required in Texas and the increase in discount rate, that has created that the value in use calculated is lower than the carrying value on the balance sheet of that project. So it's a totally separate story than the storm and the impact on the storm on the net earnings. So I don't know if you got the difference. So really, what has caused the impairment is the increase in discount rate on the back of higher risk premium. So this is a collateral. I mean, I would qualify the impairment as being a collateral effect of the storm because the risk premium has gone up following the storm. So we needed that has triggered for accountants to make a reassessment of the impairment calculation on those assets. As at Q1, which we typically do around Q3 or Q4.
I don't know if it's precise enough. I think, Jean-François, what he meant is that since we got $65 million of revenue and loss of on power edge 93, that's 28. Our share is 14.
Exactly.
But I think that one of the issues with Shannon is that it had, since the beginning when it was owned by Altera, had performed really poorly and had accumulated also a deficit in terms of the total account owed to Citi at the time. So if you take that into consideration, we would have this liability to overcome before the flip point being occurring. So when you take all this into consideration, I would agree that Shannon is on, perhaps on a borderline for us to decide if we put more money in or not. Flat Top is definitely more difficult or easier decision to make. Shannon, I would agree that it's on a borderline situation, and depending on the outcome, Shannon might be a little bit more attractive in terms of potential reinvestment than Flat Top.
Okay, that's clear. But essentially, the Shannon net impact was $14 million, and
yes.
What you're saying is you're kind of borderline in terms of whether to like walk away from that project or not.
Yeah.
Whereas Flat Top, it's a more definitive decision.
Yes.
Okay. So the next question I have is about Hawaii. In terms of, I just want to ask. You've given, limited notice to proceed on a few projects. Have you locked in all the project costs for those projects where you've started construction? I guess like with much higher steel prices and all the other commodity prices, copper and everything you've highlighted as well, everything's going up. But I'm just wondering how the construction costs for Hawaii is compared to what you kind of modeled in a few years ago when you bid the projects, and also what the situation is now in terms of locking in pricing.
It's a good point. It's true that a lot of pressure is on the raw material and what have you. So that's our team is working hard with local trade, and we also, since they're not that big of a project, we have undertaken to do some of our internally some construction management early and manage also some supply. So we wouldn't have a full EPC type for these smaller project. And also on the island, there's not that many big contractor acting on the EPC range. So our team are finalizing these contractual agreement. We will disclose the updated numbers probably in the call of Q3 in either in August or in November, and give you a little bit more detail on the future revenue and total cost. But it's true that it's a little bit challenging. I guess everybody is seeing some of these pressure on pricing. But we had secured battery component and also solar panel in previously. So quite a bit of those prices were fixed earlier on.
Okay, thanks. And then just one last question. In the MD&A, I know it's been kind of going on for, I think the disclosure was there the last quarter as well, but there's been a number of financial covenants that have been kind of tripped, and a lot of debt's been moved to as a current liability. Can you just talk about a few of them and give a bit more color in terms of, I think it's like MU Wind, there's like a French project, there's I think Mountain
Air
as well. Yeah.
Can you just
kind of run through some of them and say, like, is this something that you'll have to kind of resolve pretty quickly, or I'll just leave it there.
I will. MUA has been on the on this for a while because you remember Senvion went bankrupt and we had to do our, the self operation. We had and we are actually now doing our self the operation on MU. Remember that we are doing self operating all through the Gaspé Peninsula. So for us, it was a natural, and we hired all the prior employees of Senvion, and they are part of our team. The issue we had was to have access to the software and resetting keys and stuff like that that were caught into the Senvion bankruptcy, and we had a hard time having this given back to us. Through all kinds of negotiation, we also found out that there were another supplier that could supply these software update, and we have now an agreement with these new supplier. So I guess that by next quarter, everything should be now in normal. We have very good relationship with the existing lenders. It was a technical default. But things will be put back in order where Innergex will do the self-operating of these assets and will be recognized by banks to do so, and we'll finalize the agreement with this joint venture. Remember that MU is a joint venture with the First Nation, the Mi'kmaq from the Gaspé Peninsula. So Innergex will provide the service, O&M service for the project. So that should be finalized by the next call. Things should be back in normal. And as for Montanier, it's a little bit silly. It's an insurance commitment regarding flooding out of anywhere in Idaho. There's not that many flooding, but anyway, it was overseen when the insurance policy were put back together. And that had triggered this technical default. It's being now being fixed, and I don't expect any big issue there. And in France, remember that I spoke about Vestas problem with blades in flat top. Well, we have this blade deficiencies also in France. Now Vestas has come up with repair or enhancement of their blades to make them stronger, and that should also solve the issue. And as you know, we have been curtailed for quite a bit by the health and safety department in France after two blades had failed. That should also be settled, but those are not very material. I think that MU and Montanier will be fixed quickly, and things should be get back to normal on those.
Yep.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for the color. I'll leave it there and get back in the queue.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Mark Jarvi with CIBC Capital Markets.
Hi, good morning, everyone.
Hello?
Hi. Yep, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep, okay. Well, I'll start with the last comment and just on resolving those covenant issues. Is there cash trapped at any of the project levels that will be sort of unencumbered and come back to the top of the house once those issues are resolved in the coming quarters?
MU might have some that was trapped there, and also through the Senvion bankruptcy. They were a 19.8 million letter of credit issued towards in favor of the project to secure some obligation under the construction contract and supply agreement from Senvion. Since Senvion was not able to do these modification, we actually called on this letter of credit, and now it's been sitting in the MU account. So it didn't show in the first quarter, but it will show in the second quarter. So with all that money on hand, MU has enough money to cover any, I would say, deficiencies that were identified at the COD on MU.
Okay. And then coming back to Shannon, flat top, force measure, sounds increasingly like if it doesn't go your way, flat top, you would walk away. What other implications are there in terms of, is there any penalties or anything else beyond just the foregone cash in terms of repercussions from the tax equity or your partners? And then I guess implications that if, you know, walking away from this project and the foreclosure, if you think it has any implications on securing tax equity in the future?
Well, I think that, you know, BHE is there and Citi. Now, we've been handling this crisis with consulting with BHE and our other partner, BlackRock and Starwood in the case of Shannon. We're doing our best. I mean, it was pretty difficult to deal with this crisis. I don't think that any tax equity investors would take us for, I would say, give us some recuperation on other stuff. We are negotiating with Wells Fargo as we speak for Griffin Trail and Hillcrest to finalize things, and they are in Phoebe. So, I mean, you know, who can blame us, given the fact that this was an extreme weather event? Tax equity was asking to have these type of power hedge structure, so it's a little bit difficult for them now to tell us that it was not a good idea. Well, I agree, it was not a great idea, but they were the one who were pushing for it. And in the case of Shannon, actually, we were trying to reduce the power hedge exposure for more than a year, and they were being difficult about it and so forth, because when Altera had put Shannon in COD, I think they were a little bit optimistic on the long-term forecast. Since then, we had, when we acquired Altera, reduced this long-term forecast and wanted to reduce also the amount of supplied energy under the power edge agreement. And they were the ones who were reluctantly wanted us to reduce that exposure. So all in all, I don't think they can put this on us in the sense that if it doesn't make any sense for us to put more money into it, we've done what we had to do. We're acting as a good operator on sites. We've been negotiating and operating these sites as the best as we can do. Now, putting more capital in a structure that is a loser proposal for us, that doesn't make much sense. So I don't think anybody can keep us accountable for that.
So you don't foresee this as you go to get more tax equity for other U.S. projects, this issue, you know, limiting your ability or you know, changing who you could partner with based on this previous history? You think people will look through this and it'll be quite easy to find the tax equity you need going forward?
Well, like I said, we are now with Wells Fargo finalizing the tax equity commitment for Hillcrest, and we're same thing in Griffin Trail. Like I said, we're honest with everybody. We're open book. We're doing our best to try to solve this issue. We're fighting the fight that we have to fight in court. I don't know what else we can do.
Yeah. Okay. And then Griffin Trail, Mark, is a good example of a different configuration with the tax equity that make the job. So we're very happy with this. So I think forward, there's ways to continue on tax equity. And I think it's clearly understood by the financial community that this is a one-off, non-recurring event. So I agree with you, Michel. That
and I don't think we're the only one got cut in there. So
no. And Jeff, you provided a few comments around pieces of the puzzle in Texas in terms of what happened in the quarter, what happened post-quarter. If you could just fast forward to the end of Q2, maybe just on the consolidated cash balance with Phoebe, which you seem to be able to resolve, and where will your sort of consolidated cash be? Like, what adjustments do we have to make from quarter end? And then, depending on what happens, if you walk away or don't walk away at Flat Top and Shannon, how else could that impact the sort of the proportionate or sort of cash balance for IME?
Okay, good. Very good question, Mark. So for PB, I will save my comments because we're into discussion. So Phoebe, as I mentioned, the cash settlement has not happened. So the cash payment resides as at end of March within our accounts payable consolidated statements. So depending on the outcome of our discussion in that scenario, we might see we will have the according accounting transaction in that regards. But as for Shannon and Flat Top, in a worst case scenario, what you need to understand is for the balance sheet part, you know, the value of those two assets as an equity pickup is zero at the end of March. So no further adjustment on the balance sheet if we foreclose on those two projects. Maybe a slight adjustment we are carrying at the consolidated level, a cumulative translation adjustment under the AOCI, the accumulated other comprehensive income. So maybe $1 million or $2 million of adjustment that we would need to finalize on our statement. Maybe some tweaking on our deferred tax in that regard as well. But really, the foreclosure of those projects are as a standalone. So the only consolidated impact we can see on the balance sheet for those assets going foreclosed in Q2 would be limited dollar impact for other comprehensive income and maybe deferred tax. And then following the forecast, let's say that we foreclose 1st of June, then the earnings for April and May are ours. So you will see the earnings flowing as share of gain on joint ventures for April and March, and then after, no records of additional revenues for the remaining of the year.
But just
you follow me?
Yeah, just to make sure, Mark, in the case of Flat Top Shannon, no financial commitment or cash would be would be thrown to Flat Top Shannon. It's
exactly.
You know, there's no recourse to Innergex on that basis. So, in the worst case, we just hand out the keys over there, and there's no cash that Innergex would have to send to Flat Top or Shannon.
Exactly, and the accounts payable reside at their project level. So if they foreclose, they become the edge counterpart ownership, then it's become an interco AP and interco AR, so they settle on their own, but on a consolidated basis.
Legal fees have been agreed in front of the judge that those are for the Flat Top and Shannon account, and the legal fees are paid out of the Flat Top and Shannon accounts.
Yep.
Oh, okay. And then there was, again, some higher prices at parts of Q2. Is that a net benefit or, any hedge issues there in terms of what's going on with some of those higher prices? I'll leave it there, and hopefully we will not be talking about that next quarter.
Mark, you're referring that the comments we made under the MD&A of higher pricing in Texas, this is comparing Q1 versus Q1 a year ago.
In parts of April, we also saw some higher prices in Texas.
You're right. We Ford benefited from it, but Phoebe had a little bit of a loss on those 2 days. Yeah.
Yeah.
But nothing to compare with the other price.
Great. Okay. Thanks for taking all my questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Najee Baydoun with IA Capital Markets.
Hi, good morning. First off, appreciate all the great details on the Texas situation, but just looking forward a bit, I'd like an update on the pace of organic growth and project development. But Michelle, you provided good details on the Palomino project. Can you just talk about some of the other advanced U.S. solar projects that you have in the pipeline? And then maybe some more color on development activities in France, particularly now with the added focus on solar.
Yeah. Well, in France, if I start with France, we have secured now enough land for a 60-megawatt solar, but mind you that it's a little bit early. We have to go through all the permitting and all that stuff, but the team on the ground did very well there. So I think we have an approach that can generate a few more solar projects in the near future in that same area. I won't go too much into details, just giving you a little bit of updates of what we're doing over there. And again, in solar, I don't want to name these type of projects just yet, but Palomino is a 200-megawatt project, and we have a few more ranging from 75 to 150 megawatts spread between Pennsylvania, Kentucky, and the Northwest. The idea is to get to around the 600 megawatt, like we said, by 2023-2024-ish to deploy the solar panel that we had previously bought, if you remember, that are guaranteeing us the full amount of the ITC, the 30% ITC commitment. So these are that is the strategy. The other win, I rather not to disclose too much about it just yet, but we're making some good headwind on not to make a joke in the win, but we're making a good advancement on some of those wind development as well. And I mentioned also Chile, where power prices are, if you look at the latest few months, have improved. And also the shutting down of coal has accelerated. Engie just announced that they are shutting down some more coal facility in Chile. So I think that we are well positioned. And the good news, I think it's Quebec, potential RFPs. Also, one thing that the minister in Hydro-Quebec has made public is the fact that they are open to an extension of at least 10 years on our existing facility. And since we are the first one to have put wind project in the Gaspé Peninsula, our project are going to be qualifying for this extension. And remember that we have roughly 600 megawatt in the Gaspé Peninsula, so this is very good news for us. It would create a positive scenario where we can think about extending this project for another 10 years with we hope an attractive pricing.
Got it. And just to follow up on the last point, so the extensions that would be with I suppose minimal new investments required.
No, it's just a guarantee that a program where we can prove that under a prudent maintenance capex, these facility can sustain another 10 years. Mind you that we have overtaken the self operation in Gaspé Peninsula really early on. And our team has done a great job in managing these preemptive capex, and we've shown that the availability of these machines. We've been really proactive in catching early defect on generator bearings, all kinds of initiative from our team has made these machines available, and we think the majority of them can extend their life for another 10 years. We've been very, very aggressive in maintaining the blades. We have been creating a lot of innovation in crack detection in blades and being proactive in repairing these little cracks, a little bit like your windshield on a car. If you have a little scratch, you can go and have them repair quite effectively and very cheaply versus waiting and seeing that crack going and then suddenly you have to change your windshield. Well, we've been in the forefront of innovation by having these very, very powerful camera to take a look at the blades and have a software detecting these little cracks and having a very, again, innovative way to repair it from the top of the blades and having an SL going down and having all kinds of compounds that can be used even when it's cold in Gaspé Peninsula to repair these blades. So we're very confident that these 600 megawatt G machine can be extended for another 10 years without major capex.
Appreciate the great detail. I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thanks.
And your last question comes from the line of Rupert Mayer with National Bank.
Thank you. Just a couple quick questions. I know we're getting long in this call. A follow-up on the Quebec market. You're talking about recontracting the Gaspé projects. What's the opportunity for repowering those projects at the end of those contracts?
Well, have
is that
the opportunity
that we'll, you will have?
Yes. Yeah. There will be. We're working on it, right? I mean, it's the early stage discussion with the government in Hydro-Québec. They are putting that RFP together. But theoretically, they would be open up to have an extension of 10 years and having us also bid for a repowering scenario to extend the life of these assets by another 20 or 25 years. So all in all, it could be an extension of 10 years plus 20 or 25 years of new contract. So for us, it's a great opportunity to enhance these existing facility and make sure that they're in the portfolio for a very long term.
Great, thanks. And then on Griffin Trail, I think you show it still as uncontracted. Just remind us, what's the long-term plan there? Are you still evaluating potential offtakes on Griffin Trail?
Well, the perfect scenario would be something close to what we have in Fort City. Remember that Fort City has 300 megawatt under PPA as produced PPA and 50 megawatt being merchant. So hoping to, you know, hopefully in the next little while, I think that the crisis now in Texas has mixed up a little bit of the offer and demand, and there will be some a lot of activities in Texas regarding these potential restructuring into, you know, you have a lot of power hedges that will be looking for potential PPA. So I don't think the next 6 months or so will be a good opportunity to renegotiate PPA. But on the other end, maybe a lot of utility and potential also some customer might have been burned on that crisis. So who knows, Rupert, but this is the long-term game with Griffin Trail will be to reduce a little bit the exposure on merchant. But until we finalize with Phoebe, Phoebe still has this power hedge, so we'd love to be able to have a different structure or reduce this exposure on that power hedge. But until we do, we think that Griffin Trail is a natural hedge in that area, being 225 megawatt fully merchant. So, you know, on the long run, we would rather see less merchant exposure. But for the time being, we're perfectly happy to have Griffin Trail fully merchant.
Very good. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Ms. Fichon, there are no further questions at this time.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, and we'll reconvene in August. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, you may now disconnect your lines.